Support for KHOI is provided by Pasta al Forno Italian Restaurant, 2601 East 13th Street, Ames. Now hiring bartenders, servers, hostesses.
More information at 515-337-1422 or in person.
Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here around our kitchen table once a week to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we're at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. Welcome to our table today. Well, I want to share a quick news item here. Evidently, everybody's in a tizzy because tonight, believe it or not, well, actually all week, but tonight is a good night, there will be five planets all lined up in the heavens, and we will be able to see them, and they're supposed to be wonderful, and Mercury, Jupiter, Venus, Uranus, and Mars will line up near the moon long about sunset. So, you know, if you have any ethereal goings-on or thoughts of diving to some higher powers.
So you just look at where the moon rises and then you can see the stars?
No. The best time to catch it will be tonight, believe it or not, right after sunset. Look to the western horizon.
Okay? The western horizon.
Yeah. As the sun goes down, you know, things are visible sometimes when the sun's still up. So the planets will stretch from the horizon line around to halfway up to the night sky. See, these things don't happen very often, and it's kind of nice to note them because it reminds us just how small we are, Donna.
Yes, well, that's always a good thing. Okay. I'm all for humility.
Also, before we get into our topic today, I want to share word of the day. And this is information I got from Carl Kurtz. He's a local prairie conservationist and photographer, and he sends around really nice photographs. And his word of the day is graupel.
Can you spell that?
Graupel, G-R-A-U-P-E-L. And he had a picture of a leaf covered with kind of crusty-looking snow, and that is evidently graupel. It is. Unlike sleet, which is ice pellets frozen from frozen rains, graupel is very fine, small flakes of snow. So if you want to go down in there.
We had a couple of days ago.
Graupel. Uh-huh. And, yeah, so snow comes in many forms. And
okay, is this a word in the English language, or are we talking Eskimo here or something?
I don't know, but it sounds like a nice word. Let's
graupel.
Use it more often.
Okay.
Graupel. And graupel.
Okay, it graupled on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
It's a noun. The graupel came on Sunday?
It did. I think it's a noun.
Okay.
Anyway, word of the day, graupel.
Okay, I hope we don't have any more graupel now. I am ready for spring.
Yes, because spring is a time for magic to happen. Seeds turn into plants, turn into food. Joining us at our kitchen table today is Kate Solko. She's been on before. She's a wonderful farmer and a good guest. Welcome to our table, Kate.
Thank you.
Tell us about yourself and tell us about your farm just north of Ames. Yes.
Yep. So I farm about 5 acres of vegetables on the property of Alluvial Brewing Company and Prairie Moon Winery. My farm name is Root to Rise Farm. I'm in the fourth year of my own operation after 10 years of working on other people's farms previous to that. I manage a CSA. We're looking at about 100 members this year. And then we also sell at the Ames Farmers Market.
Oh, very good. Very good. Root to Rise Farm. And yes, you are a wonderful addition to our table, giving us food and good stuff.
Yeah, I want to say I always look forward. Kate has a very beautiful booth at the Farmers Market. She always arranges things so artfully, and your vegetables are presented beautifully. And she has always some unusual varieties, which I'm like, make a beeline for.
Yeah, that's good. That's what we're going to talk about today. Talk about how we get started in the spring. So what do you grow, Kate, and what do you do this time of year? Evidently, the idea of ordering seeds and things happens a long time ago. When do you start thinking about this season's garden?
I start ordering seeds and planning in January, usually. You know, farming is it takes up a lot of energy, and I like to give myself the end of November and December off to pursue other things, knit, hang out with my kids, things like that.
Sleep.
This is true. Not lift heavy things. So yeah, I start planning in January. And typically by the end of January, all of my seeds are ordered. This time of year. Oh, and then I spend February doing, paperwork and taxes and things like that. Some of my marketing work, things like that. And then March is really when I start rolling with, you know, getting my growing space in order, my greenhouse and working on starting seeds. Yeah.
Well, that's good. So yes, you've got 4 acres, but I assume you don't just plant things in the ground. What happens this time of year? There's things to do, like you said, in the greenhouse.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a lot of different levels of protection and growing space. So the very first place that things get started is in our basement. We have a grow room in our basement with lights and heat mats. And we start the earliest things in that space. We can fit 80 flats, so it's quite a bit of space. And we do that so that we don't have to heat the greenhouse with propane. So it reduces our dependence on propane and our seed starting costs. And then we turned the greenhouse on. We have a 30 by 48 greenhouse. And we turned on and started heating that greenhouse about 2 weeks ago. And yeah, we've got some of the earliest greens going on in there. And then soon we'll be looking at starting tomatoes and peppers and things like that. But
oh, that's good.
Not to get ahead of myself. Yeah.
Well, what are the first things that you seed? Where does it all begin?
Yeah. One of the very first things I do is really interesting to me. It's a kind of a pet project that I have. One of the first things I do is start ginger these days. So in early March, I buy a whole case of organic ginger, which this year was about 35-40 pounds. And we cut that up into small pieces and start to pre-sprout it on heat mats in the grow room. And then as far as seeds, things that most people might be interested in growing, the earliest things that we start are greens that we will put out in our tunnels.
Like so, salad greens?
Salad,
yeah.
Yep, lettuce, bok choy, some, what else are the earliest things? Kohlrabi is a pretty early one that we start. And then after that, we move on from the leafy greens to cabbages, broccoli, Swiss chard, things like that we're starting and a lot of those are just popping up for us right now.
Ah, good. You mentioned heat mats. I think one of the better inventions because little seeds, if you put them just on a windowsill or in a room, they're going to need a little bit more oomph than just our regular house environment can give us. What kind of temperature do you try to keep your heat mats at?
Well, it varies, but usually between 70 and 80 for the ginger, and then for germinating tomatoes and peppers, eggplant like that, I keep it somewhere between 70 and 75. It's the thermostat's not super precise, but I like to say between 70 and 80.
So what is a heat mat? Is it like a heating pad for plants? How big
it is.
How
yes.
big are they?
Absolutely. Well, you can get small ones that just go under, say, one flat for people who wanted to start seeds at home. We have heat mats that span the shelves of our grow racks. So they are, those adjustable wire racks. I would say they're, 18 inches by 4 feet. Sorry about the units there, mixed units. But I have heat mats that are that size, like four by a foot and a half or two maybe. And so I fit four flats on each of those heat mats. Yeah. Good. And they make a huge difference. I think when people are having trouble growing tomatoes and peppers, that's one of the first things to look at really is, I say start them later and give them heat. I think that those are the, for tomatoes.
So like in Lana, do you use heat mats in your passive solar?
Yes, I have a place for 8 flats at a time to go on a heat mat. And then I kind of move things around. I don't do 80
flats. So do you need the heat mat at night? Is that?
Yeah. They want to be cozy. Oh, and right now I've got my plants on a heat mat and, little things are starting to come up. I started parsley early. I always had the darndest time getting that started, but I wish to report my parsley actually, I remembered to soak the seeds. Advice for starting seeds can usually be found in the seed catalogs. And yes, it says, if you really want to get things going, soak the seeds for a while. So I did.
For everything or just for those difficult ones?
It just tells you. You can kind of think of seeds that are kind of hard and chunky,
Nasturtium. I soak my nasturtium.
Yes.
One of the few things I grow. Right.
Anyway, I do
or
have
peas. With,
yeah.
Peas.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Yes. And then you think, okay, Kate, you have a farm. I have a farm. You think, The soil to start these things. We could just go out and dig up some soil, but it's funny. The ground is hard this time of year. So both you and I use potting soil, and there's advantages to that. What's the advantages of using potting soil?
I like to use a compost-based potting soil. Because it provides some nutrients to my seedlings. So I know that I don't have to fertilize them very early in their life. I choose a potting soil that has a consistent size so that I don't have to sift it or worry about chunks like that, not filling up my flats evenly. I choose to purchase a product because it's the same from year to year.
Okay.
So I know what I'm dealing with and I'm not troubleshooting each year. The formulation is consistent. Yeah.
So where does one buy potting soil? Like in a 50-pound bag or something? Is that how it comes?
You can. I buy pallet totes.
Of course you do, right?
I order online from a company called Cosmo. A lot of people.
What's, say that name again?
Cosmo.
Cowsmow. Cosmo.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No W on the end. Yeah.
Okay.
They're out of Wisconsin and it's, compost from dairy cattle, and is the base. And I find that it is a really nice, consistent mix. Although Beautiful Lands Products is an Iowa company, and I've had good luck with theirs as well. They're out of West Branch, Iowa, and can get things shipped to you, too. Yeah.
That's good.
What do you use, Lana?
I've used both, and this year I got, well, like Kate, I with another farmer, I split a big order because I use a lot more than one bag at a time. I usually go through at least, even for my rather compared to Kate, a smaller operation, I go through like 10, 15 bags of the stuff.
Well, because sell seedlings.
Yeah, yeah.
For us that don't start them very well,
yeah,
it's good to buy seedlings. Then you can skip that precarious part of the process.
It is a little precarious. It is a little precarious because we are in Iowa, and things are cold. You talked about, Kate, you talked about things growing warm and toasty in your basement to get started, but we still have a month of coolish weather. We don't quite know whether we might have some snow yet.
Yeah, we might get some more grapple.
Yeah, very. See? good use of the word of the day. Very good, very good. Everyone talks about frost-free dates, okay? And that's fine and dandy, and really and truly, if you want to totally avoid having frost, you pretty much have to wait until the first week in May to be 100% sure, because
here in
the middle of Iowa, because these things are not set in stone. We certainly know what the weather is like. It is an average. The weather people go and they punch their numbers and everything. So it's a percentage, whether it's you have a 10% chance of freezing or a 30% chance of freezing. The end of March, we still have a 30 or 50% chance of getting pretty darn cold. We have a 30% chance of getting way down below zero. So watch the weatherman and watch for the frost-free days. But remember, that's not like a blessing from on high. That is a percentage. The frost-free date of mid-May, May 16th, just means that is a really pretty good shot that, yes, we will have warm temperatures.
The other thing that I would say about that is that there are a lot of plants that it exposed to temperatures in 30s and 40s really stunt them. So just because we don't kill them doesn't mean that we've done right by them by putting them out early either. I'm an advocate of, you know, really finding those warm weather plants, basil, peppers, eggplant, tomatoes, and just honestly waiting. I'm an advocate of late planting. I find that they really catch up. And then on the other side, looking at plants that can really withstand a light frost and maybe ways that we can protect them a little bit so that we can be actively growing and excited about our garden, but not maybe putting everything in at once.
So what goes out first in your farm, Kate?
Lettuce, spinach, and Asian greens like bok choy, or I like koji and tatsoi, which are little greens that you could grow for little small leaves or small heads. They're all pretty frost tolerant. Yeah,
and we really can watch your plants, and they will tell you that if they are unhappy, put basil out way too early, and it will like bite the dust, and it, all you can say is that you screwed up.
Oops.
Yes, it is.
I really don't put basil out until I'm looking at temperatures absolutely consistently over 50. And
that can be May.
We're talking about nighttime temperatures too.
Yep.
I'm a late basil planter.
Yeah, yes, that's true. And even some seeds that we put out, we don't usually start things like okra and sunflowers and squash. Well, you could start those as a plant, but I plant those by seed, and they won't do a darn thing until the soil is warm. It's not just the air, it's the soil being warm.
Well, oh, that's a good point. A soil thermometer is not very expensive. That's a good tool. Yeah.
Yeah. I have one of those. It's, you know, it kind of looks like a mini meat thermometer.
How far down do you go?
I don't know. It's a
4 or 5 inches?
Well, the thing I have is the little probe is about 6 inches. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much that is.
Well, let me ask you, ladies, for people that are just venturing into gardening and maybe want to have a small start, you know, even 6x6 or 12x12 or something like that, or even some container planting is what everybody's always encouraged. You read in all these magazines, just grow something, just so you know what the growing process is like. But how do you choose what you want to grow? I mean, if I wanted to start a tomato, you know, there's an endless amount of catalogs. There's an endless amount of varieties. Even Lana picks 30 varieties of tomatoes. Well, what if I only wanted to try 2? How do you pick the varieties? I mean, if I were going to grow something, I would like to grow something that I cannot buy at the supermarket. So I want something that tastes a little bit different. How do you pick the seeds and the varieties and choose what you're going to grow every season?
Well, my answer would be slightly different it would be kind of drastically different, actually, based on, you know, how I choose them for my scale versus if I were going to grow my first garden. If I were going to grow my first garden, I would think about the things that I enjoy, or like the best tomato that I've ever had, and what that looked like. Was it yellow? Was it really dark in color? Or was it a big juicy one, or maybe like a little meaty one? And then I would choose something that excited me and that was maybe similar in color, size, structure, something like that, to this tomato that I remember that I loved, you know. And the reason that I would do that is because I think it's the passion for what we're growing that inspires us to care for it really well. And so if you think that round red tomatoes are really average, it's not going to excite you to go out and, you know, and take care of those plants.
Right. You might want a green one or a yellow one. And what are your favorite catalogs?
I purchase a lot of my seeds through High Mowing and Johnny Select Seeds, mm-hmm. High Mowing Seeds, and Johnny Select Seeds. I have found really consistent, selection, lots of selection, integrity of the companies. If I have seeds that the whole packet just does not germinate, I know that they'll reimburse me for those seeds. And they keep, for my purposes, they keep online records of what I've purchased in the past, which is helpful for me, so I don't have to keep that record. Mm-hmm. And then past that, so I order probably 75% of my seeds from those two companies. And then the 25% that is outside that, I like to purchase from small seed companies. So I purchase from Seed Savers, Exchange, and Decora. I like Uprising Seeds. I like Southern Exposure Seeds. And I've had good luck with Fruition Seeds. And those are all smaller seed companies. And they have selections of slightly more interesting niche things or heirloom varieties that I can't find from the bigger companies.
Yeah, talking about getting to be excited about a vegetable, if you're only going to grow one or two, you can do worse than read a seed catalog long on a cold winter day, because the verbiage about each variety, it can wax quite poetical, and you get all excited about how people are explaining what these things taste like. Remember that this is a seasonal thing. Things take time. We rush too often, and you've been at it for quite a while, Kate, and I must say I have too. You learn how to keep track of the seasons. Keep track of these seeds that you get to be your favorites. You don't just kind of guess. Well, you guess, but then keep track of what that was. You do your own little bit of research,
right,
and remember what things taste like from year to year. It's a real pleasure to do that. I want to remind folks that this is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a waltz, Waltz de la Petite Jeune Fille, Waltz of the Little Girls. Oh, a nice waltz for Women's History Month.
Yeah,
they're Waltz of the Little Girls. So we are waltzing around our garden with Kate Solko. She is the farmer at Root to Rise Farm, just north of Ames. She's got a lot of experience on getting seeds into plants, and then that turns into food for all of us to enjoy. We've been talking about different kinds of varieties and different ways of getting those seeds started. Kate, do you have any experience or a comment on planting by phases of the moon? I read about that, and I kind of give it a try, and I never know if it works or not. What is your experience on planting by what people call the phases of the moon?
Wait, first, Lenny, better explain what that point of view is exactly.
Okay, there is a biodynamic French intensive gardening method that takes into account like we talked about before with planets moving around and the sun going around and tides and these folks swear that all of these major forces on our planet also exert forces not only on us but on our plants too, whether it's a long germinating seed or a short germinating seed. It has to do with the tides in the ocean, and basically planting by phases of the moon means that right after the new moon, when you can't see a moon in the sky, it's dark.
Where it's growing.
It's growing. It's a good time to plant things that need a lot of, get the leaves going. The major force is up toward the sun. And after the full moon, the major force is down toward the center of the earth, which means it encourages root growth. So that's kind of the basic
how-to. So your tubers, your onions, the things that grow under the ground.
Seedlings, making them, So have you ever worried about that, Kay?
Well, I think it's an interesting idea. I feel like there are a lot of factors to consider. And while I agree that there may be some forces at play that we can't quantify very well, I like to personally focus on the things that we can control or observe very easily. So I'm more likely to plant based on whether it's going to rain, say, if I need things to be watered in, or whether the soil is warm enough, because I wouldn't want, if it was warm enough to plant my radishes, I guess I wouldn't necessarily want to wait 2 weeks until that right window to get them in the ground, because I'd rather have radishes a couple weeks early. But I think that there are, you know, there's wisdom in a lot of these things that are hard to quantify that people have been doing for a long time. And I don't think that it's all hoo-ha, as I would say.
So, there's a lot of things we don't
from
understand.
From a production tax standpoint, really worrying about getting things for the first market or something like that is where I focus. Yeah.
Right. The push and pull of the moon probably has something to do with how we exist here on Earth, but so does the push and pull of things like the groundhog that shows up to eat your tomato plant. That's a pretty big force, too. Good. Well, you mentioned sure. that you grow for CSA, and you also grow for Farmers Market. What people are, especially if you're at the Farmers Market, people kind of want to know, what is this organic thing? Do you have a thought on organic certification?
Yeah. So I have a lot of history working on farms that are certified organic. My own operation for the first 3 years was certified organic, or we pursued certification, and were approved for organic certification. This last year, I chose to drop the certification, not really changing my practices, but after 14 years of growing, a couple things became more important to me or came to the forefront of my attention. And those things are that while I believe the certification is a really, really useful tool worldwide and on larger farms, someone like me who markets to direct to consumer, I think we can do a lot of that communication just between the customer and I. So I have chosen to spend those resources, because certification is resource, time resource and financial resource. It's slightly resource heavy, and I chose to spend those resources of my time and my money going forward to communicate those practices directly to my consumers instead of to a third party certifier.
Well,
I still have a lot of faith in that institution, if you will. I definitely purchase certified organic things at the grocery store very regularly. But for me, I wanted to, I guess after 14 years, I want to move from a system of management that's based off of someone else's values to a place of confidence in managing my own production however I see fit, which, to be clear, largely aligns with that the National Organic Program. Yeah.
Well, organic certification, for those of you who do not farm and garden, entails a lot of bookkeeping. You have to kind of say where your seed sources come from and what your soil amendments are and your practices, and you have to keep it written down. And then a person from a certifying organization shows up at your farm and checks all of this out. So it is verified third party, and it is a lot of work for somebody mm-hmm. on the scale that Kate is talking about. And I have, having been involved in the organic industry for 40 years, I have to say, I think certification is very important for larger farms where the farmer is not talking to the consumer, because otherwise the consumer has no idea how something was grown. And for those people, that certification is really valuable. For somebody on Kate's scale, it is completely understandable, because she can go to the farmer's market and you can look her in the eye and she can explain to you, well, I didn't use any pesticides and I used all, or you know, natural fertilizers and this sort of thing. And for that purpose, I think it's probably not necessary. So good for you. It does it is time consuming and it's expensive too. It's another thing that a farmer has to do.
We did spend a lot of money doing that. And, you know, to be able to focus those resources on growing our farm in a different way, I think felt important for us at this point of our operation.
Right. So it's not that you're going to not be growing organically anymore. It's just that you're not going to use the certification process.
Correct. Yeah. And, you know, there's just a lot of little pieces. For instance, one of the things that I did like a little happy dance about was when I dropped the certification, when I chose not to renew, the wording is surrendered my certification, which meant that I left on good terms. And if I pursue certification in the future, they will accept me back. And so when I did that, one of the things that I was so excited about was getting to throw away all my seed packets. Now, this is something that you might not consider, but that is one thing that I needed to do, is I needed for years to save every single seed packet for traceability purposes. And I had quite a large Rubbermaid tote full of just empty seed packets. And I was really excited to throw them all away and to be able to throw away a seed packet when I finished the seeds in it, or compost it, you know, the paper ones. so just to spend that storage area in a different way or use that storage area in a different way, and have that burden off of me for record keeping. Yeah.
Yes, it's true. You as a farmer are going to plain do the right thing because you as a farmer, we know you. We see you at farmer's market all the time. Speaking of farmer's market, I always like to ask, what have you learned from your customers? What do customers expect when they come up to your stand?
What have I learned from customers?
Sometimes it's pretty unexpected.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I guess it's a slightly different answer, but I guess one of the things that I get out of customers is just really connection to where the food is going. So I guess that's not something I learned from them, but more of their appreciation at market to see people excited about the produce they grow, to hear about how they used the produce that they bought last week, on their family table, to hear about what varieties they really loved and which ones they maybe wouldn't purchase again. Those things are really satisfying to me. And it's one of the ways that customers, reward me, not just financially, but by sharing with me how the food that I grow, impacts their family and their table and their diet. And so I love farmers market for that reason, to connect with customers, to see it full circle. And from, I guess that does answer the question about what I learn. I learn from them which varieties they're passionate about, and that helps inform my decisions moving forward too.
Yes, when a customer comes and actually asks for a variety, because I think a lot of people just say, oh, I'll have some tomatoes or I'll have some beans, but we know there is a difference. Now, you talk about growing for your customers, but just in your own kitchen, do you have like a favorite tomato or a favorite vegetable? You just plain have to have that kind every year. I have my favorites. What are some of yours?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I love Lacinato kale, and I like Dazzling Blue is the variety of Lacinato kale I really, really like.
Is that a new variety, the Dazzling Blue? I've seen that in catalogs.
I don't believe so. I think it's an heirloom, but I would have to look that up to verify.
You just love the name.
Yeah. I like varieties that have variation, that have genetic diversity, you know, in them. And so, I'm really into heirloom collard greens this year. So I've added several varieties. I'll report back later about how those go. But Old Timey Blue is my longtime favorite from Seed Savers. Indicora collard greens, it's lovely. My favorite tomato, I would have a hard time picking one. So Paul Robeson is definitely one of my favorite tomatoes. It's a dark, I would say it's a petite slicer. It's a small slicing tomato that has a lot of flavor, similar to maybe Cherokee Purple, maybe more people might be familiar with, but a little darker and a little smaller. For flavor, for cherry tomatoes, I just don't think you can beat Sun Gold. They're so good. They're just like candy in the summer. And then for paste, I really like paste tomatoes. Speckled Roman, if you don't have trouble with blossom end rot, we have fairly high pH here in our soils, and we don't have a lot of trouble with blossom end rot. So speckled Roman is just a fantastic heirloom paste.
So a paste tomato is for making sauce. It's for cooking.
Ooh, yes. Yum. See, we have...
Salads or fresh salsa. Yeah. Paste tomatoes are fantastic for fresh salsa, too.
That's true.
Very good. Yeah. Very good.
They're meaty. I wanted to ask each of you, what new vegetable or different, or what is the most exciting thing that we can see from you, from your fields this year?
Oh, goodness, they're not up yet.
Well, but you've picked your seeds. I know you must have done... I know Lana is always trying new things, so she must be doing some experiments. Mm-hmm. What are you looking forward to?
I'm going to give shishito peppers a try. I know they've been around for a while, but I know...
I love them.
What about you, Kate?
I love winter squash. I'm trying some new varieties this year, and I'm expanding production of a few that I had really good luck with. Last year, I had really good luck with black futsu, which is sort of a petite pumpkin squash.
Was that the one with the little whitish stuff on it?
I believe the one that you're talking about is autumn frost.
That was really good. Autumn frost is an excellent
winter squash. And then I would add Thelma Sanders to that list.
That's an heirloom also
from Seed Savers. And Thelma Sanders is just a excellent, very tasty. It's kind of like an acorn type, but it's a buff color. And they're great flavor, great producers. But you know, the exciting thing that I'm doing this year, is expanding my ginger production. And that's maybe a little, tricky from like a home gardener's perspective. But this will be the third year that we're growing ginger. And we're doing some collaborations with the brewery that we're on the property of. And fresh baby ginger is beautiful and a beautiful thing to, have in season, but it also is very easy to preserve. And so we've been enjoying ginger that we grew here in Iowa all year long as a family, and we look to expand production so that other people can enjoy that too.
Good for you.
Right.
Thank you.
Ginger is tropical, so
hence greenhouse.
Well, it's high maintenance. Absolutely. It's high maintenance. Yeah.
I want to remind folks, this is KHOI and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more at www.khoifm.org. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Ooh, I'm looking forward to ginger. Isn't that a nice thing that you can actually grow and that someone can actually grow with a little bit of skill here in Iowa? Very good. I want to put a plug in for... Now, I have a tomato that is not really something to harvest and preserve, but I have always grown little currant-sized tomatoes. Originally, I got the seeds about 15 years ago, and they were called Texas Tiny at the time, and they're and you can still find Texas Tiny in seed catalogs, and they're made for garden grazing. That is something that we have to remember we can do with for gardens. We can just eat them right off the vine because you can just pick them by the handful.
Something children like.
And something that children. So I kind of like my little tiny tomatoes. They're very good. And I want to mention that I save the seeds off of them. Kate, do you ever save seeds?
I do save some seeds. I don't have the energy or storage space to pursue seed saving on a broad scale. But I save seeds from things that I determine to be easy to save seeds from. Mm-hmm. So, beans, some of the beans that I like long noodle beans, I save my seeds for. Sunflowers, I save seeds for. A few dry beans that I grow for family use, and some flowers, because if I get off types in those things, from a production standpoint, it doesn't impact me financially too much. I haven't put a lot of energy into seed saving. It's something that I think it would be really interesting to pursue, maybe as I wrap up my commercial career, when I'm maybe closer to retirement age and looking for things for my own, just my own table. Yeah.
Good. It'll keep you out in the garden anyway. Yes. It's a wonderful thing. And remind us then, too, that really is cycle, that plants provide seeds for their next year's adventure. So it's so nice to be part of that. Kate, I know you're a woman of many talents, and I was wondering if you would share your pancake recipe with us. Kate and Donna actually did a fine job of feeding a lot of people pancakes at a maple syrup party that we were at. So a little bit of pancake wisdom, Kate.
So I help one of my friends make maple syrup, Front Yard Sugar, and is the name of the company here in Ames. And we like to have a big party every year, and invite people to see how the syrup is made. And Ben Hawks, the owner of that company, my friend, puts on this big party every year. And a couple years ago, got this wild hair to decide to make pancakes, serve pancakes for everybody. And he asked me
in the woods, in the cold, in the woods.
In the woods. Yeah. Pancakes for 100 in the woods. And we have a big flat top grill. And I make a whole lot of pancakes. I started with a buttermilk pancake recipe. Pretty standard buttermilk pancake recipe. And I subbed half of it for half of the
wheat.
Flour. Yeah. It's all purpose flour. Half of the all purpose flour for some local buckwheat honey. I apologize. Flour. And we came up with a really, really good pancake recipe, I think it's pretty tasty. Yeah.
Well, there was a whole lot of happy people, and Donna was there too. It was definitely a two-person job.
Well, yeah, it takes at least four hands. You put them on the plate, and then you got to slap the butter on it, and you got to pour the syrup on it, and children seem to love it, to come out and see how the trees are tapped and then how it's boiled. And the whole setup for boiling it over a wood fire is quite elaborate.
A good reason.
Yeah, and it was cold.
A good reason.
It was cold this time.
Yeah.
Well, Kate, do you have any things you're really looking forward to for this season? I know spring is going to be coming. So, what are you going to be looking forward to this season?
I'm I think every year in the spring, I just look forward to the transition to fresh food and to the work outside. For me, working outside is really satisfying. That's one of the reasons I like working with Ben. Sugaring, actually, is because it pulls me out of the house a little before seed starting time, a little before feels natural to me when I'm sitting on my couch in my warm house. And every year, the work, the sun on my face, the, you know, connecting with food, producing food, that is really satisfying to me. So getting back in the swing of that is what I look forward to each spring, to eating the fresh food, to, you know, getting my hands in the soil, to the work, to the hauling, all of it. I really enjoy it.
Fantastic. Well, Kate, thank you for being with us. You mentioned you have, we'll be able to find you at Farmer's Market, and you have a CSA. Do you have some contact information that you could share with us?
Yeah. So you can find me on Facebook or Instagram if you look up at Root to Rise Farmer. And also my email is root2risefarmer@gmail.com. And any of those, you can contact me through any of those methods.
Good.
And get information. Yeah.
Good.
About what we're doing.
Great. Do you have shares available, or are you all sold out for this year?
We do have a few shares available. We're filling up super fast this time of year. So if somebody's interested in that, I would definitely get on investigating that. But we do have a few shares available yet this year. And we also host tours out at the farm. So if there are like school groups or camps or things like that, that's something that we really are passionate about: education, land ethic, and where our food comes from, things like that. So,
very good. Well, thank you for being with us today, Kate.
I look forward to those salad greens.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, good. It will be fun.
So soon.
Oh, good. We've been talking to Kate Sokol from Root to Rise Farm in Ames, Iowa. Yes, it is time. It's time to turn those seeds into plants, into food. Oh, it's going to be so nice. I just know it. I want to mention we have a few upcomings happening. Upcomings for the area here. This fine radio station, KHOI Community Radio, is going to be doing some fundraising later in the month of April. And there is a book sale. What could be better than radio and books? Book sale, KHOI book sale is going to be happening Friday, April 14th, Saturday, April 15th, and Sunday, April 16th, right here at the KHOI studios. And it's just a fun thing. I love to go through books, and there'll be lots to share. You can find out more at KHOI Community Radio or www.khoifm.org. And KHOI Community Radio studios are at 622 Douglas Avenue in Ames, Iowa. That is Friday, April 14th, Saturday, April 15th, and Sunday, April 16th. And yes, you can donate boxes of books, but if you do, be sure to buy books too. It's kind of like gardening. It's a circular thing. Yes, it is. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've had music by the Barn Owl Band today. Support this fine radio station. Community radio makes the world go round. Yes, it does. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.